Blog Talk Radio.
You have made it to Stu and the Nun, an online radio show that looks to inform, educate, and hopefully make you laugh. Stu and the Nun is a show focused on national security, policy, politics, and selfless service. We do this by not only interviewing guests, but also sharing our perspectives and asking you, the listener, to interact with us on our show chat room, via our Facebook page, and on Twitter. And hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode, episode 25 of Stu and the Nun. I am Stu, and joining me tonight, like almost always, we're usually both here, my good buddy, the Nun. What's up, Nun?
My brother. I'm typically always here, even when I'm like calling in from austere environments, just like you, be it the hockey rink or a private, you know, ranch out in California. I try to make it. I try to show up. I try to be here.
Yeah, we haven't. We've only had a couple where we both can't be here, but we've always had great guest hosts that have filled in. So, you know, they've probably done better than we have, to be quite honest. You know, Kelly and Shard and who else have we had? Tuminelli and all kind of folks. So, yeah.
Yeah, but, I mean, we might have to put some of them on staff.
We might. They might want to. They may be looking for commission checks, but I guess when we start getting ours, they'll start getting theirs. But yes.
And you're not getting one.
Yeah, exactly. They can get half of what we get, which is half of zero is still zero. But yeah. So coming to you tonight here, episode 25 from both the Northern and Southern studios, home studios, and tonight up here in the Northern studio. I'm taking it easy this week, Nun. I'm just sipping on a good old Canadian Labatt Blue. The choice beer of the Northern Studio of Stu and the Nun.
Well, I like where your head's at. You know, Labatt's Blue is a great one, which, you know, it's a breath of fresh air, a cool, refreshing drink from my homeland. But I'm actually not drinking anything Canadian tonight out of protest. And the reason why I'm not drinking anything Canadian tonight out of protest is because a young man by the name of Trudeau, who's the Justin Bieber of Canada politics, has, you know, stated that Canada will no longer continue its vengeful bombing of ISIS in Iraq and Syria, and that we will go to a more Canadian role of putting fuel in the bombers that do the bombing, because we're better not getting our hands dirty with such things. So at a protest, I'm going to drink something a little American today because, you know, they're the ones that are going to be continuing to drop the bombs.
Yeah, that's good to know. I was not aware of that. I may have to hurry up, finish off this blue and grab me some good old Lead Slinger's whiskey here in a second for that.
America.
What's he doing, man? He's pretty – I guess it's not surprising, right? I don't know a lot about him. I remember a little bit when he was voted in. I guess this isn't surprising for his demeanor. Would that be safe
to
say?
Yeah, no. I mean, this was part of his. This was part of his campaign. You know, he said that, you know, on his first day of office that, you know, he was going to do everything in his power to like stop Canada from being involved in the U.S.-led mission. You know, I'm going to quote here. The announcement comes just a few months after Trudeau took power. He said on his first day of office that he would end Canada's participation in the U.S.-led mission against the militant group. You know, this is his words. We are for what will be affected, not for what will make us feel good to say at any given moment. the people terrorized by ISIS every day don't need our vengeance. They need our help. He just believes that, you know, bombing is not a long-term strategy. He believes that, you know, there needs to be something else. And he honestly has stated over and again that he does not believe ISIS is a threat. It is not a global threat. He believes it's a regional threat. And so, you know, how quickly he forgets that, you know, an Islamic militant radicalized, ran on the Tomb of the Unknown in Canada and into the House of Parliament shooting at people but a year ago. You know, so it's amazing how political rhetoric and ideas, you know, get formulated and fostered and nurtured, but they're not substantiated in, you know, reality. So I feel bad because, you know, maybe he thinks that that'll stop them from coming over there, but it won't. It'll pay no difference, and they're going to continue to come, and they'll continue to be a soft target.
Yeah, I guess so. Good thing they got us next door. But, hey, on other topics, late breaking news, my friend. I thought this would be something we'd talk about later on in the show, but it looks like it is overwhelming. They are already calling the New Hampshire caucus, Donald Trump winning the Republican primary and Sanders winning the Democratic primary. It's already being called.
Wow. That's
yeah.
Early.
Very early. They are, I don't know. You know, I guess they figured this stuff out, but 10% of the Democrat, the 10% of the votes are in, and Sanders already has 53% to 40 over Hillary, and that's enough for them to call it. It looks like Trump right now is at 33. Kasich, John Kasich, is in at second at 17, then Bush at 12, then Rubio at 10, Cruz at 10, Christie at 8, and then Carly, Carson, and some guy named Gilmore, Happy Gilmore there. So they are, they're calling it for Trump already. You and I were just talking right before the show started about this, and in just a few minutes since the show started, it is they're already banking it.
The I was really hoping to see how Vermin Supreme did on that. He's run for president for 15 consecutive elections. He is a street preacher that believes, you know, his four pillars of one being zombie apocalypse, the other being, what are they? It's a brilliant speech. He sounds just like Bill O'Reilly, like his mannerisms. But he was physically on the ballot up there, so I was wanting to see if his numbers came in higher than, like, these nuts. But it's crazy, you know, like Sanders is gaining momentum, and you know, I think, you know, the FBI releasing the information that they are officially investigating Hillary Clinton and her emails probably played a role, probably more so than, you know, aged Madeleine Albright saying there's a special place in hell for women that don't support women. So it's interesting how this is turning up. And Trump, you know, getting one, Cruz getting one. What say the Cruz number again?
Cruz and it looks like Cruz and Rubio are both tied at 10%. So
that's an interesting dynamic right there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, Kasich too, coming out of nowhere, or not, you know, essentially, you know, he was not really a factor in Iowa, and hasn't been a factor really to date in all the debates coming up. But, you know, it just goes to show you that New Hampshire, they always say, votes a little bit different or kind of has different drivers. But, you know, interesting you mentioned about Hillary, I think, and the comment from Madeleine Albright, I think that probably did some damage on her too, because New Hampshire, you know, live free or die, they seem to be pretty independent minded people. I don't think they like being trying to be guilted into voting. I don't think that sits well with them, in my opinion. I'll have to find out. You know, I'm going to be up there soon, so maybe I'll have to ask some folks what they thought about that. But it seems like they wouldn't.
Yeah, it's super, you know, super interesting about Kasich, because, you know, he's been on every platform. He's been on every debate you know, he gets hardly any time. He's got the worst mannerisms in the world. But yet he hangs on. You know, I know Carly, you know, was really disappointed that she didn't make the ABC debate. And, you know, it's really interesting that that happened. But, you know, that's why we have these primaries. You know, this is kind of to thin the herd. It's also to kind of, you know, let the parties know a little bit more about, you know, who their delegates really want to hear from and, you know, their constituents. So I'm kind of excited about the process. I'm a little frustrated that, you know, we're still in double digits and, you know, candidates on one side of the party. But we'll see how it goes, you know.
Yeah, I think this will keep Kasich from dropping out. But, you know, it's interesting. I'm looking at some detailed numbers here. Rand Paul got 114 votes, Santorum 16, Huckabee 13. They're not even in the frickin' race anymore, and there's people still voting for him. Either somebody in New Hampshire doesn't have cable or dish, or they just don't care, and they stick by their guns to the very end, right? But, yeah, those three guys all got votes. I mean,
well, you know, the loyalty vote, you know?
Yeah. I think these nuts should have ran. That guy should have been there too. He probably would have probably have done better than Christie. But yeah, so
yeah,
Cruz now
I
is 11% and Cruz at 11, Rubio at 10. So yeah, those guys will probably be going back and forth neck and neck. But it'll be interesting to see.
A time in Alaska while I was there, there's a certain congressman, I believe the last name was Nelson. He lost to an opponent that had died in a plane crash, you know, a few weeks earlier. And, you know, people still, you know, even though he wasn't alive, you know, he still pulled the votes. And it's kind of neat how that happens sometimes. So, but we got a great show. I mean, we're getting sidelined and sidetracked. You know, we got an amazing guest tonight. Pretty excited about it. You know, and, you know, I've always been, I'm not going to fanboy him because, you know, I don't think there's a need to fanboy the guy, but, you know, when his blog was at its peak, coincidentally, was the same time that my blog was doing pretty decent as well. And, you know, he was just so much cooler because he had MTV, you know, looking into him. He's a New York guy. You know, it's pretty neat, you know, to see, you know, especially, you know, I'm not, you know, saying a lieutenant doesn't have a viable voice, but I thought he was brilliant with how he handled that and how he handled those guys. He did it with such class, especially, like, due to, you know, what happens in combat, people get injured, people get hurt, people get, you know, disciplined. And, but our good friend Matt Gallagher is here, bringing him on now. And, you know, he's gotten married and all grown up, and now he's a legit author. He was pretty legit before. I've actually traveled to go and watch him speak. I've just been a fan of his writing for a couple of years, and I just respect him as a man. Matt, welcome to the show, my man.
Hey, guys. Appreciate it. And, Toby, I want you to know that was a very kind introduction, but you are definitely cooler than I will ever be, so know that.
Yeah,
no,
but did you travel? Did you travel to go listen to Toby speak? Because I mean,
that's on my bucket list. I need to take care of that in the future.
Well, in case you're interested, I will be speaking next weekend at the Texas Association of Physician Assistants. It's
nice. It's
a great crowd. They're all dying to hear me. Better they'll be like leaving the room. But there's nothing like speaking to medical professionals on veteran issues. But pretty excited about that. But Don't make that, even though it's in the thriving metropolis of Houston. They don't sell tickets, otherwise I'd be like pimping it really hard right now. But my man, I'm so excited you're on the show. I'm seeing you everywhere right now, and that's great. That's exciting stuff. You know, your writing is really matured, but let's just kind of tell our audience a little bit about why you're on the show tonight. You know, one, you served extremely well. You served a time of combat. You came back, and you've really been on the tip of the spear in the belly of the beast there up in New York, working not only on your own writing, helping other guys and gals with their writing, Kaboom, in my opinion, great book. How do you feel Kaboom went?
Really well. I look back on it, and it's a thing I'm proud of, both the blog and the book. It'll probably be the most honest thing I ever write. Now that I've transitioned to fiction, I hope it's not the best thing I ever write. This new book is called Youngblood. It's a novel, and it's been a very different experience. I went back to school after I wrote Kaboom. To grad school to become a better creative writer, and that took some swallowing of pride. I'd already published a book, but I wanted to get better, and I knew that I was kind of a classroom learner. So I'm really glad I did it. And in some ways, concurrently, I was doing going to like an all veterans writing workshop up here, so I was meeting and working with some really great veteran writers like Phil Klei and Jacob Siegel and some others. And, that's just great because you're around other people who have been there and done that, and you can kind of call each other on your own BS as you're drafting your work. But then simultaneously, I was in school, I was working with people who had never maybe met a military veteran before, whether they were a Hasidic Jew from Brooklyn or, maybe a party girl from Istanbul. In many cases, I was the first military veteran they'd ever encountered, let alone kind of read their work. So it was really a really good thing for me to do, kind of to hone the creative process and to try to make each page and each sentence as good as it can be. Because it was important to me that this book that would become my novel be read by veterans and civilians alike.
Well, I mean, I had the pleasure of seeing you up in New York. I guess it's been a couple of years, and we actually went out and drank some beers and whiskeys with some of those guys.
Yeah,
and then after you guys did Fire and Forget, which we'll have put up here on the page here shortly a link to all your work. I thought that was a great way for you to take those voices and put them out there. But what a transition going from Bioptic to now you're in the fiction. And so the character creation, the formulation of plot, the formulation of interpersonal relationships, the dialogue, I've been messing around with it a little bit myself, and I'll be honest with you, it's been very discouraging because inside my brain, like, all these guys and gals get lost. How are you able to do it? Because you've done it really well, and some of the authors that I'm big fans of, guys like Tim O'Brien, who wrote The Things They Carried, I thought was a brilliant piece of literature, is like calling your book a must read and stuff. I mean, this is pretty powerful stuff. So how did you manage that? How did you get it all into that head and shake it around and have it all come out coherently?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's took a lot of rewriting. I'm a type of writer that the first draft is usually pretty bad or needs a lot of work. At least that was the case with my fiction. But so it was just kind of just being stubborn with it and deciding that this was something I wanted to do. I thought it was an important story. It's set a few years after I myself was in Iraq. I was over there in 07 and 08. This is kind of set during the withdrawal. So it kind of has a wider view at the kind of the entirety of the war. So I decided to be tenacious with it. I quit my job as a speechwriter to finish this sucker. So I figured once I did that, I was all in. So I might as well get it right. You just kind of rework it and you rework it and rework it and you share it with friends that you trust. Many of whom were vets. Some civilians as well, and then get their take on it. It took a while for me to figure out how to write from a woman's perspective, right? But I needed to do that for this book because there's a prominent Iraqi woman character in it. I kind of had a maybe not so great taste in my mouth with my encounters with the Ranger Battalion overseas, but I wanted to have a prominent Ranger character in here, so I shared it with with one of my buddies who spent time in 275, and he was really helpful with that. So, you know, I think all, when it was all said and done, went through 15, 16 drafts, took about 4 years, and it was just, you know, it was just something that I just needed to do. It wasn't even just wanting to do it. I think the moment when I realized that maybe it had finally come together was when Tim O'Brien, whose work I very much admire as well. I mean, he's the godfather of war literature, really. And we just kind of sent him an early copy of the book, kind of on a lark, not thinking that we'd hear back from him. But he sent a very kind email with his endorsement. I'll admit that was I put on Kanye West Power. And I think I was just dancing in the apartment in my boxers for a good 10 minutes. It was a pretty good day.
Well, there are visuals we don't necessarily need. I'm glad we're on the radio, but that's all right. Yeah, I mean,
you could take that for free. That one's for all the listeners.
There we go. And if you tune in later on our Facebook page, Matt will upload a video of him doing such dance in his boxers, only for our listeners. Secret link for you. Let me ask you, you know, it's as we all three of us are you know, longtime mill bloggers and from different perspectives, but all wrote in that same genre. We all know that there are many folks, there's not near as many as there used to be for a variety of reasons. But one big reason is a lot of folks lost what we call it, right, their post-deployment voice. They didn't know what they had to write about once they got back. They're like, I just wrote about my deployment and I'm done and there's nothing else in my life worth writing about. So many guys and gals we know I've talked to about this and this issue and so, you know, those that have continued to write have struggled with finding that post-deployment voice, but to find a whole new voice like yourself, Mike Scotty's another one that went down the route of writing a novel, writing, you know, not just even writing a collection of everything you saw or went through, which is kind of what you did with Kaboom, but actually branching out a whole new way. I mean, what is it, I guess, kind of what was the decision-making process, to put it in military terms, to sit there and go, this is, it's worth it, there's a market, I'm gonna jump in with 2 feet, we'll see how it goes. I mean, kind of what was your thoughts when you were doing that?
Sure. No, I mean, that's definitely something I struggled with when I got back and kind of after Kaboom had come out. I was like, well, what now? So I just kind of kept doing what I'd been doing with Kaboom. I was like, well, I'm not in Iraq anymore. But when I was over there, you know, I just wrote about what interested me, what bothered me, what kind of kept me up at night, et cetera. So I started doing that back here. You know, I'd moved to New York, as Toby mentioned. You know, I'm originally from Nevada. The biggest city I'd lived in before was Honolulu when I was stationed with the 25th Infantry Division, and I very quickly realized that New York did not have much of the Aloha spirit in it. So, you know, I kind of started writing about that, just kind of transitioning, you know, the kid from the West in Gotham. You know, on top of that, being a vet, right? And I was slowly meeting more of them around, but there weren't a lot, and I that first year especially, I really didn't know a lot. And you know, I don't even know if I was conscious of it, but I was writing about kind of the post 9/11 return home, right? That is something that we've all done in our own ways, and it's a very unique experience. You know, whether you're doing it and you're still in, and you're doing it with your brothers and sisters in arms, or if you decide to get out like I did, and you're kind of figuring out what you want to do, right? It's a strange time. It can be very scary. It can also be a lot of fun, you know, as you're kind of figuring out, you know, like we all know that there's something about Floyd, right? That kind of clarity, that purpose every day, every patrol. There's nothing like that in everyday life. So it can. I know for me, it took me some time to figure it out and realize that I didn't need to replicate that feeling. That was for over there, and that's okay. Back here, you can find purpose in different ways. So I was just kind of writing about that the whole time. Some of it was essays, and other times, I was figuring out how to write fiction. Kind of started with short stories. The story that it ended up becoming, Youngblood, actually started as a short story. and it kind of started as an idea. It was I wanted to write a ghost story, a mystery about Iraq, right? I was really interested in the way myths and stories kind of got passed down from unit to unit, right? You know, over the course of 9 years, I'm sure you all had this experience, you know, those first couple of days when you show up to replace that unit in the town or sector you're in. And they have a whole deployment's worth of stories, right? Some of them about each other, some of them about the locals. It's a really interesting time. And then, you know, at 12 months later, 15 months later, whatever, you're doing the same thing for the unit that's replacing you. And I was really interested in that and the way that then the locals kind of interacted with that story, right? Because they're there for the entire thing. I mean, the really smart, crafty Iraqi sheiks I remember were the ones that figured out how to figured out the commander's personalities very quickly and how to get things to work for them, kind of utilizing those personalities. And I have great respect for that. You know, I mean, that's a survival skill, not just for that sheik, but for his tribe, for his people. Kind of all of that was just kind of formulating as I was making my own transition back. And I decided that I wanted to write about it, and fiction would be a good vehicle for that. Not just because I'd already written nonfiction, but I felt like it would give me maybe a little bit more space for storytelling, and getting emotional truths out of something, even if the facts aren't exactly the way they may have happened.
Right, right. You know, there's another book we haven't really talked much about, and that is Fire and Forget, your short stories in the Long mm-hmm. War. I mean, was that where the short story started with for Youngblood, or kind of, and how did that go? Because that was kind of it almost seems like it was kind of an add-on or built-on to Kaboom. You kind of, it like you just took some things that really stuck out that had more meat to them that you wanted to write more about. Was that kind of that transition between Kaboom and Youngblood?
Absolutely. It was right in the middle of it, actually. It was 2013 is when that book came out. And, you know, I have one short story in there, and I was one of the editors. And then I think there's a total of 13 short stories in there from a lot of, you know, kind of a who's who of post 9/11 veteran writers. Colby Bazell, who's just fantastic, has a story in there. Phil Klei, who's been everywhere recently. Siobhan Fallon, who's a Army spouse who had a short story collection come out. You know, those are just three of many more. And it was just really, it was kind of part of it came out of that veterans writing group I mentioned earlier. You know, we're getting to know each other. We were friends. We were colleagues. And we were out at the bar one night, and we're just like, hey, let's put together an anthology, right? Like, there really hasn't been a lot of fiction yet. There's been some successful nonfiction. You know, let's prove to these, you know, agents and editors that there can be great fiction about these subjects and topics too. You know, just kind of a bar napkin idea of like, oh, do you know this person? Do you think they might have a short story? Oh, do you know this person? Another great story in there is by another Texan, Brian Van Riet, who's just a writer out of Austin who I admire greatly. So, you know, really, you know, I don't know if it was the booze or what, but you know, we were like, okay, yeah, we'll do this. And the next morning's like, oh, we're actually gonna try this. Let's put this together. And it, you know, it was just really, you know, kind of right place, right time, right voices. You know, I think upwards of 19 or 20 publishing houses said no before DiCapo, who had published Kaboom, said yes. So, you know, as soon as somebody, you know, in the writing world, as soon as somebody says yes, you just take it and run with it. You don't stop to ask any questions. It's kind of similar to the military like that. You know, you work hard, you work hard, you work hard. And as soon as you get the green light, you just go, no, you know, and you don't stop to clarify. So, yeah, we did it. You know, much to our delight, you know, it hit. And I think a lot of that had to do with kind of the variety of voices and perspectives, right? You know, if somebody didn't like Matt Gallagher's story, that was okay. Maybe they liked Colby's or Siobhan's. So, you know, I think there was something in there for everybody. Some of the stories are set, you know, in Iraq and Afghanistan. Like Ted Janis's Raid is about a midnight commando raid by a Ranger unit, right? It's hardcore action, a lot of momentum in that story, a lot of you know, real kind of in the moment vibrancy. But then you kind of have slower stories, you know, about the homecoming back, about the, you know, kind of the wrestling with the what now question that I think a lot of post 9/11 vets deal with. Yeah, you know, it kind of ran the gamut, and you know, it was kind of the little engine that could. It was, you know, just kind of supposed to be a small anthology, and you know, who buys anthologies anymore? But really, you know, we owe a great deal to kind of the military community and the veteran community, because they got behind the book and really made it a success, and it's something that I know all of us, you know, everybody in there is kind of going their own way now. But it's something we all look back on with a lot of pride. And it, you know, it was just kind of a fun thing to do, kind of at the beginning, or near the beginning of our careers.
So now, was the timing coming off of that, you know, I know you worked with an agent, you know, there's a great piece that you wrote up. We just shared it on our site, on Books by Veterans. That you talked about working with an agent, but you know, I'm a, you know, a guy that believes in strategy, believes in having a plan. You know, the old infantry first sergeant and platoon sergeant comes out in me, where it's like I really got to like plan everything to death.
Sure.
I mean, so like Hemingway's like The Sun Also Rises was like his first novel offering to the world, and you know, Youngblood's kind of your first novel offering. You know, I can't help but see a connection here that, you know, you're doing this and you have a beautiful voice. Was like, was the time just like right for this step? Did someone be like, it is time to turn that corner? I know you just spoke about it a little bit earlier, but like strategically, was there somebody like speaking into you and speaking into your writing saying, hey man, like it's ready, you know, and you're the guy, you know, we've had some great guys on here like Kerry Patton, you know, and Mike, Scotty, and you are like that, you know, Colby's got Kerouac down. Like, you know, Colby is our modern day Kerouac, right?
Mm-hmm. But like, yes, absolutely.
You really have like this Hemingway-ish thing going. And, you know, was it strategic? Were you like, was it on purpose, or you just like, I'm just the luckiest dude on earth?
Maybe a little bit of both. You know, I mean, certainly a lot of luck was involved. But yeah, I mean, it was just something I'd always wanted to do. You know, this was the kind of book, I think, you know, even way back when I started Kaboom the blog, you know, I'd never kind of, I loved nonfiction, but I'd never really thought that was something I'd want to do. You know, part of the reason with Kaboom was mostly to start staying in touch with family and friends, but part of it, you know, looking back, was like, you know, maybe when I'm an old man, and I can sit down and be a writer, you know, this will be a good like time capsule for me. You know, things kind of just, you know, played out differently. So yeah, you know, a couple, you know, when I decided to get out of the army and try to become a writer. Yeah, I mean, the novel, I think, for many writers, and it was definitely for me, is kind of the great, is the Moby Dick, right? It's the great white whale that you're chasing. And you know, I wanted to get it right. So that, you know, that took a lot. You know, if it had been up to, you know, if I'd set, you know, if you'd asked me a couple years ago, you know, what's the plan, I probably would have wanted to have this sucker out 2-3 years ago. But it wasn't ready. And I needed to, over the course of writing it, I had to be really honest with myself that I didn't want to rush this. This was something I wanted to get nailed down. You know, just part, you know, kind of a reminder of why that was important was, you know, watching the news these past couple of years with what's, you know, Iraq's been changing and ISIS has been in control of parts of it, and then, you know, then Ramadi's getting taken back. So, you know, that was kind of a good reminder that, you know, it was good not to rush it, right? Frankly, a lot of the stuff is still kind of playing out. So, you know, there were a lot of people giving me advice, and some of it was good advice, some of it was bad, some of it was saying, you got to get this out now. Some of them were saying, take your time. Ultimately, it was just kind of one of those things that, like, I think this is the same with any piece of writing. You know, it's the same as sitting down with a blog piece, right? Or writing a nonfiction essay. You just know, you just got to trust your kind of inner inner instinct and be like, this is it. This is ready. You know, whether that means hitting publish and it's online, or whether that means sending the email saying, I'm done. Do with it. You know, it's as good as it's going to be. So, yeah, I mean, any time writers kind of ask for advice, how do you know? I don't think you ever 100% know, but you just got to trust yourself and trust your inner voice that if you believe that this thing is as good as it can be, that means it's ready. If you think it still needs work, the best laid plans of mice and men, right? Luckily, writing is something you can return to the next day. It's not quite like an army patrol where, come hell or high water, you better have that mission accomplished in the next 3 hours. So that's a little different. That was a really long winded way of saying trust yourself.
So now that it's, I thought you did a great job. Obviously, Altria and like Simon & Schuster know what they're doing in terms of like the actual publication process, the marketing, and getting it on bookshelves. You had the pre-orders, and now it's out there. What's it like going to these like book signings and like these speaking engagements where you're doing readings and engaging in your readership? Like, what's it like to have fans, and how busy is like the book tour going to be?
Yeah, I mean, it's cool. It's great. You spend so long with something that's really important to you, right, and really special to you, and then it's out there in the world, and sometimes it's fun. Sometimes people get something out of the book or out of a story that maybe you didn't even intend, and that's both cool and you have to take a step back and realize that's a good thing, right? That means it's out there and people are engaging with it. There's always at the readings, there's always one crazy question, whether it's from a super wacky hippie who can't understand why anybody would ever join the military and thinks if world peace it's just everybody putting down their arms and singing Kumbaya away. So, you get one of those at every reading, or then on the opposite end of the spectrum, you get, super, super rah-rah, find something in the book that they think is critical, and wants to rant and rave about that. But, you do something enough a couple times and you realize that's just part of the process, and that's okay. And hey, you know what? Thanks for coming. Thanks for coming to the reading and sharing that. Now we're going to talk. On to the next question, kind of thing. First couple times, I won't lie, that it hurts a little bit, but those things have scabbed over now, and you just realize it's just part of the gig.
Man, that's. People forget, like, not everyone that shows up is there to, like, pass words of encouragement.
That's very true. No, sometimes they're there, it's just like in-person trolls. Like, I mean, trolling is big on the internet. And in some ways, it's kind of almost like, sometimes anytime that happens, like, I have a little bit of respect for them because, they showed up and they're doing it on purpose, in person. They're not hiding behind a screen name. On the other hand, I'm like, don't you have like a grandchild to call or something? Like, didn't you have wasn't there a better way to spend 2 hours in your evening than showing up and being a dick? But, maybe not, who knows?
Well, not everyone can be like cool all the time, but there's trolls and stuff and everywhere you go. Before we cut you loose, we, not that we don't have time, we have plenty of time. Since you're kind of, I'm in Texas, Troy's in, Buffalo, but we both travel a lot. But one place we don't get to a lot is, like, the big city. With all the election stuff going on and, the hometown, battle going on between Clinton and the Donald, What's the word on the street? What's the word on the street there? And you know, if you don't mind sharing a little bit of insight of what it's like to be in one of the more influential municipalities in the world during a pretty big election cycle.
Yeah, no, it's kind of a really interesting time. You know, I'm deep in the Republic of Brooklyn, so you know, a lot of young people, especially, are feeling the burn. Which is, you know, kind of odd because Hillary's campaign is based here in Brooklyn. So, you know, everything I've been hearing that they were planning to kind of just take their lumps in New Hampshire tonight and then move on. On the Republican side, my conservative friends here are really energized by Kasich's victory tonight. So, you know, they're hopeful that might spin into something. But, you know, I was just at the coffee shop earlier, and I think I saw 3 Bernie Sanders shirts. So, you know, I know this isn't the case back home in Nevada, but the burn is everywhere, at least here in Brooklyn.
Is that was that a Starbucks? I must ask. Was that a Starbucks you saw that in?
It was not. No, it was a local indie organic hipster coffee shop. So, you know,
didn't want to miss an opportunity for irony.
Exactly. Oh, exactly. Yeah.
No, Kasich out of nowhere today, huh?
Yeah. No, I was when I turned on the news earlier, I was pleasantly surprised. I heard you guys right before I came on. I think you're absolutely right. Like, he's definitely going to, you know, poor Schoen, he was going to drop out, I think. But no, he's in it for at least another week.
3 more weeks.
Three more.
All right, so I'm going to ask you a couple of questions. We're going to dive into politics a little bit.
Sure.
So I'm going to ask you 2. One is probably going to be easy for you, and the other one you may have to stretch and put on your creative hat a little bit and maybe step outside the norm. So I'm going to ask you the easy one first, and the first one is, not saying if you had to pick, if you were going to vote Democrat, who would you want to see out of the 2? Or, heck, you could throw Biden or that dude from Maryland that no one remembers in there. who would you want to see in the White House? If you had to vote Democrat, if you had to pick a Democrat, who would you go with?
Right now, as of today, I'd go Hillary. Only because I watched a couple of the Democratic debates and I like some of what Sanders has to say. But it's just, I need details. You know, maybe this is the old army officer in me, but you know, give me some substance. You know, I don't need a Marshall Plan on everything, but you know, if the question's about, you know, fixing the VA or about dealing with ISIS and you're responding, but the banks, that's just not going to do it for me. You know, say what you will about Hillary, and a lot has been said, but in this, as of today, I'd have to go with her, only because, you know, she can talk details.
Right. Okay, not even Biden, huh? Okay. Remember, I threw him in
mom,
there.
My
he
mom
was,
would say
he was a zinger.
I'm sorry?
No, he was the alibi. He was a zinger in there for you to get an easy out.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, Uncle Joe, who doesn't appreciate a little bit of Uncle Joe, but since he's not running, I thought it'd only be fair to those 2.
So the other side of the coin, which you have a lot to pick from, and you know, you may have to, you know, if you were a conservative, if you were going to vote Republican and only Republican, not one against the other, I think I probably know who you won't, because based on what you said about Sanders, I think who I know you wouldn't pick on the Republican side. But who would you pick on the Republican side if you had to vote Republican?
I like a lot of what Kasich has to say, you know, I have a lot of family in Ohio, mostly the Cleveland area, and who have had kind of positive things to say about him. So, I'd go Kasich, especially after the results of New Hampshire.
Okay. All right. And when you said no substance, I figured you definitely were going to go for Trump.
No, I'll admit to being entertained at times by some of his speeches, but devil's in the details. I need some details.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, let me hop in real fast and ask a current events question, since we got a couple of political questions in there. I guess it's kind of political. Next week, I don't know if you know this, but on the Stew and the Nuns, special guest, exclusive interview with Forcecom Commander General Abrams.
Oh, wow. Who's currently, no big deal.
Just the Forcecom Commander, like, getting down with the baldness. Right now, it passed his desk, and, you know, he put it forward. There's a lot of controversy about Bergdahl, and, you know, there's a lot of different opinions out there. And, you know, of course, you know, one major throbbing opinion is, you know, coming from the enlisted side of the house, and that's, like, string him up and shoot him. And, you know, I'm curious where you kind of fall on this in terms of, like, how do you think the situation's been handled? What do you think of the situation as a whole? And what do you think the future of the situation should be?
Really good question. I think like many vets, I'm just furious about it. But I Task and Purpose, the military veteran site, does a great weekly podcast, kind of responding to the serial episodes. And I've learned a great deal. They have a guy, Nate Bethea, who's a writer, who was actually in Bergdahl's battalion, who kind of just has really smart things to say about it. In some ways, it seems very clear that Bergdahl, got service members wounded and killed searching for him. You know, how can that not be part of the trial and what shakes out? Part of me finds this whole serial thing ridiculous, right? Serial season one, it was a cold case, right? It was trying to get the justice system to respond to something they'd already issued. This is clearly a ploy from his defense team to try to mess with the military justice system. I think that's disgusting, right?
Do you think that's why he did it? You think his defense team put him up to talk with and allow that to be released?
Yeah,
because it didn't put him in a good light. I mean, it really kind of made him look bad.
It almost seems like a Hail Mary, right? That they figured that because he was already kind of being crucified in the media, at least by vets in the media. That they figured, you know, what's the worst case? I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. That seems all kind of like, you know, I've watched Law and Order and The Good Wife. So maybe I'm just trying. I've watched too many of those episodes. I'm trying to put on my lawyer hat. But then there's a part of me I'll admit, no man left behind doesn't come with an asterisk, right? So it's up to us now. It's up to the military courts to deal with him. But when people say, "Oh, you know, we should have just let him be tortured," no, that's just not who we are. That's just not how we conduct ourselves. This is the right way, you know, to determine if he's guilty and guilty of what. But on a personal, visceral level, I totally get where that anger is coming from. I absolutely do.
Yeah. Do you think, real quick on that, the follow-up, do you think it was worth trading him for five really known, really bad dudes? You think about the people you've pucked, the guys that you've picked up on the battlefield that weren't even, and you knew they were guilty, and they didn't make it to the level of Gitmo, but these guys were so bad they made it there. Do you think they're worth a trade for him, or should we have tried other ways to get him? You like how I put that? I put that in perspective for you?
let me chew it over. I mean, my understanding is that those guys, they weren't returned to Afghanistan, right? They were returned to somewhere, like they were returned to
Qatar. Yeah, for a year.
Returned to Qatar.
If that's the best deal we could do, yes, it was worth it. If we could have waited, I don't know. I think we needed to bring him home one way or another and have him face our form of justice.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, we've covered a lot tonight, Matt, and I want to make sure that you get a chance to tell our listeners kind of where they can, you know, where all they can find the book, if you're going to be doing book signings, if you have dates locked in or anything like that, or where they can find that information at.
Yeah, sure. So, once again, the title of the novel is Youngblood. It's set during the withdrawal from Iraq, so it's kind of a glimpse back at the entire nine-year war. It's available, you know, wherever books are, your local independent, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. You can find me on Twitter. I'm at Matt Gallagher Zero. I'm on Facebook as well. I'm already friends with Troy and Toby, if you're mutual friends with them. And then my website is MattGallagherAuthor.com, and it has an events listing right there that you can kind of see where I'll be reading next. I'll be reading here in New York on Thursday in Manhattan, and then I'll be down in D.C. on Saturday at the bookstore Politics and Prose, and then just kind of hitting the road for the next two or three months, peddling books, doing that. So, hope to see some of you out there. I always love to talk shop with people.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, you mentioned a couple shows earlier that you've watched to kind of educate you to be a lawyer, but I just heard today, just so you know this is maybe exclusive, there's apparently a new reality show coming on called The Housewives of CENTCOM. So,
what?
Yeah.
Wait, is this real?
It looks real, yes. It is not The Onion, it is not The Devil Blog. They have signed a deal, the Real Housewives of CENTCOM. So if you could imagine a whole bunch of CENTCOM warriors, probably officer wives, it should make for good TV, I guess. I don't know what it will make. Add that to your DVR.
I can't wait to see the SEALs' wives just like laying the thunder down.
Yes. Absolutely. Not putting up with that tea room gossip at all.
But all right. Well, hey, Matt, thank you so much for joining us tonight here on Stu and the Nun. We really appreciate it. And, hey, make sure you tune back in next week yourself, dude. Listen, we're going to have General Abrams on. We're really excited about that because we're the first interview he has done and the only one he's doing since he did the Bergdahl decision. So we're pretty stoked about that.
You should be. Congratulations. That's big time. And thanks, guys. Always a pleasure to talk to you both.
Yeah, and when
you know,
go ahead, Toby.
You're big time too, bro. You know, like I got to tell you, man, I'm like super proud to know you. I'm extremely encouraged by your work. And for those of us that are, you know, just humble little scribes trying to figure it out, man, I see you up there, you know, doing these things, and dude, it's just inspiring, man. You know, God bless you for continuing to keep in the trenches, and thanks for inspiring me, man. I appreciate you.
Oh, thanks, Toby. Right back at you. Looking forward to what comes next, okay?
Always.
All right. You keep us up. Keep this up to date. Let us know when you got something new happening. We'd love to have you back on.
Sounds good, guys. Onward.
All right. Take it easy, Matt.
Take care.
All right. All right, everybody, as Matt Gallagher, make sure you check it out. We put the website, MattGallagherAuthor.com, up on the Facebook page. We've also got links to the book, links to the Amazon. So go check it out. If you've never read Kaboom, take it all the way back there. I think Amazon is a special. You can get all three on a great deal. So as Toby has said, as you heard him, because he fanboys everybody. He fanboys all the cool people, should I say. Matt has a hell of a
voice.
Only
the deserving.
Yeah.
Only the deserving.
It's something that Gary Trudeau and I talked about many times. There's not a whole bunch of soldiers out there that can write. There were a whole bunch of authors that decided to become soldiers for a little while. That's really what it is. And I think you'd agree with me, Toby, that Matt falls in that.
Like without a doubt, you know, and that was like, you know, I remember the, you know, getting to get to know him at Blog World a little bit, or the Mill Blog Conference, and you know, it's just, you know, he lays it down, man. He lays it down well. And that's like what blows my mind is, you know, serving the same unit as Colby, and you know, meeting guys like Matt. You know, it just, people don't realize, you know, the talent that's actually out there. You know, Colby's on the front page, the cover of Esquire now. you know, with a piece that he wrote. Well, he actually was a guest on our show. You know, he was working on that piece out here in Texas. And it's just exciting to see these guys out there doing it. And, you know, it used to be this thing, you know, where young men would go off and do something and then come back and be like, oh, I'm going to be a writer. And they were like so full of crap. I'm like, this dude's doing it. And, you know, and part of me has a little bit of envy because, you know, I'm like a slave to the entrepreneurial bug. But, man, I respect the hell out of him for making it happen.
Yeah.
We don't got a ton of time, and lots have happened in the world. We got into it a little bit at the beginning, Troy, but we haven't done bald man rants in a little while, so I thought I'd tee you up and let you tee you up and tee off on some bald man rants. Go ahead.
All right, I'll go first. I have not a lot to rant about, except let me just say this. You know, a couple weeks ago we had our good friend Taco on to talk about the premiere of 13 Hours, and I finally got the chance to go see that this last weekend. To be moved is an understatement at the end of that. It was, you know, American Sniper was great, phenomenal movie, and did great in the box office. I'm kind of sad if I would have ran about anything that more people haven't went and seen 13 Hours and watched it and understood what it was about. It, regardless of your politics, regardless of what you feel, if someone thought it was a video or this or that or whatever, any of that aside, you will see, knowing that it's based on a true story, knowing that you know, definitely three guys, Tonto, Oz, and Tig, were been all over the news, were advisors to it. We have to take it for what it is. It was a true, exact thing that happened. I was torn, man. I'm telling you, I sat in the theater afterward. I was heaving and trying to hold back the tears. At the same time, I was proud. At the same time, I was mega pissed off to know there were so many assets that were standing by ready to go that were just held for whatever reason, and we'll probably never know. But if you haven't went and seen it, go see it. Let the people that made the movie know that it's still wanted. It's definitely a movie you want to put in your collection. And if anything else, besides being a great action movie with on the edge of your seat, it's a true freaking story. So if you haven't seen it, I can't push it enough. That's pretty much where I'm hit on.
Well, you know, that's the thing that really kind of sucks about that movie is that it's a true story, and you know, most people know how it's going to end. And, you know, all of a sudden there's a real face to everything that happens there, and you realize, like, hey, this is what's kind of going to happen. But, you know, on a cool note, a wonderful lady that does a lot here locally. Her son was a stud in the 82nd. He moved overseas and lives in Malta now. But, you know, her and I, you know, maintain a great friendship. She's, you know, very active in the veteran community here in the Austin, Texas area. And, you know, she's used to work for the Spurs, and now she's doing a huge indoor fitness thing. And her son, you know, was in that movie, and it was really neat. He didn't tell her anything about it, and then she went to the movies and watched it and, like, saw him in it, and then, you know, was like, what? So it's kind of neat to, like, see how, like, different guys, you know, got opportunities to be in that film and really paid homage. I don't have a ton of bald rants to go through. I kind of, you know, aired mine out earlier on young Trudeau and, you know, his naivety in terms of thinking that ISIS is not a global threat and ISIS is not a strategic threat, you know, to North America. Canada is a proud country. It's a capable country. It has an amazing military. It's got a strong one. It's diverse. It's impressive. Don't shortchange yourself by thinking that, you know, combat is not for Canadians. When push came to shove in the First and the Second World War, Canada was there first and got it on. So I feel like he disrespected the lineage of hundreds of thousands of Canadians. But other than that, really excited about next week. Excited that we have the ForceCom commander, General Abrams, coming on our show. It's an exclusive. It's compliments of hard work. It's compliments of relationships. And I'm excited, Troy. I'm going to let you close out because you made that happen, and I'm excited for next week. I can't
see. Yeah, Absolutely. So be sure and join us next Tuesday night at 8 o'clock Eastern here on Blog Talk Radio, Stu and the Nun. And we look forward to talking to you all then, and especially talking to General Abrams. And until then, let everyone know we will see you all next week. Toby, good night.
Good night, everybody.
Night, bud.